Wise Women by Q. She really should have known better, Bernice thought as she watched the planet's surface hurtle towards the windscreen. After all, when had she ever known a Christmas holiday to go right? She'd had misgivings right from the off about the shuttle pod, and especially the pilot, a balding, pear-shaped man who seemed much too eager to please. Bernice couldn't quite place his vibe. New hire? The owner's nephew? Whatever the case, the man definitely didn't exude professional competence. "Try venting the coolant!" Bernice shouted as the shuttle tried to shake itself apart. "I can't!" the pilot bleated, pounding the landing controls for the 20th time. "We won't be able to take off again if we overheat!" Bernice stared at him. "Or if we crash!" When the man only stared back, Bernice hauled him out of the pilot's seat and dropped in herself. Right, temperature control, she scanned frantically for the cooling system's little thermometer icon. Oh, damn it! What did spacecraft manufacturers have against standardized consoles? There! A long, freckly arm shot past Bernice's nose and flipped a switch. The pod gave an almighty lurch, tossing its three occupants about like popcorn. It worked, though. The sudden downward thrust gave the shuttle's stabilizers just enough to work with. Bernice only hoped the extra lift would soften their landing. The good news is, it did. Mostly. The bad news? "Controls are dead," Bernice reported. "Expected that. Probably out of service till we can get them cooled down. Everyone okay?" The pilot, who looked like he'd tried to cushion his landing with his own face, gave Bernice a weak thumbs up with the hand not holding his bleeding nose. The owner of the freckly arm, Andrea Callie McAllister, a tall, skinny soul with white blonde hair and a bone-dry wit, stood up and took stock.
"I'm operational. You?"
"Fine." Bernice groped under the console for the manual hatch release. "Well, we were nearly at the landing site when we went down. Looks like we'll just have to walk the rest of the way." She popped the hatch and stepped outside. There was no sign of the landing pad, or the shuttle port, or in fact any civilization at all. Nothing but harsh desert scrubland and a heat-bleached sky as far as the eye could see.
"Ah," Bernice amended. "Okay, maybe we won't walk the rest of the way."
Callie stepped down from the hatch.
"Interesting," she noted. "Well, on the bright side, great spot for a suntan."
Bernice smirked. Underneath all the freckles, Callie was so pale that she looked like she'd get a sunburn from a heated debate. "Now all we need is some pina coladas and a couple of cabana boys."
"Excuse me,"
the pilot, who was about as close to a cabana boy as they were likely to get, squinted at the horizon.
"Am I mad? Or is the ground moving?"
Bernice hopped back into the pod and fetched her field glasses. The pilot wasn't mad. About a kilometre away, the desert floor was moving. No, slithering. Directly towards them. Callie stepped back towards the shuttle.
Is that normal?
For this planet, no idea. Bernice adjusted her binoculars. The slithering resolved itself into shapes. A party of lizard-like creatures streaked towards them, their long tails leaving rapid-fire S-curves in the sand.
Kyoshans!
Bernice felt a sudden pang. She and Callie were invited guests here, but she wasn't sure how warm a welcome they'd get when their hosts saw the damage to their fragile ecosystem. Contrails in the sky and a freshly gouged trench in the earth both pointed to the shuttle like long accusing fingers. Bernice scanned the throng again and suddenly spotted a familiar face wearing an oversized slouch hat.
Jilly!
Bernice trotted out to meet her. Jilly was an old teammate from a dig a few months back. The little Kyoshan had invited all her old crewmates here to celebrate Three Sisters, Kyos's big midwinter holiday. It looked like Bernice and Callie were the only ones who'd accepted.
Miss,
Chilly reached the crash site and stood up on her back legs, examining Bernice closely.
You are safe?
Safe and sound. Can't say the same for our shuttle pod, though. Chilly scuttled over to the pod. By this time, the rest of her party, friends, family, emergency services, had arrived, many of them staring at Bernice with frank curiosity. She returned the favour. Until today, Chilly was the only Kyoshin she'd ever met, and she was eager to learn more about their notoriously secretive culture. Kyoshins were small gecko-like creatures, about 3 feet tall on average, with gills behind their ears and cockatoo-like mohawk crests on their heads. They were a parthenogenetic race, all female, and came in a variety of muted earth tones. Bernice spotted intricate mottled patterns, just like Jilly's, running down each individual's flanks. A distance away, a group of smaller individuals, children, stood up with their tails all wrapped round each other for comfort and support, peering at the spectacle like a pack of little leathery meerkats. Jilly finished her inspection of the pod.
"Is kaput?"
she pronounced. "Well, thank you for that diagnosis, Dr. Obvious," Bernice grinned. "The real question is, can we get it up and running again?" Jilly conferred with her group. Bernice's first surprise lesson in Kyoshin anatomy, bioluminescence. The mottled patches on their sides lit up in a whole spectrum of colours as they croaked and trilled, their language a fascinating mix of sight and sound. Bernice was intrigued. She'd never seen Jilly speak that way before. But then again, she guessed there wouldn't have been much point on a team full of other species who wouldn't have understood her anyway. A handful of Jilly's friends and relations examined the shuttle and held a quick conference. Bernice was almost spellbound watching them. Seeing a group of chatting Kyoshins was like watching lightning flicker through a distant thunderstorm. Finally, Jilly faced her again.
"The ship needs coolant."
"Yes. Have you got any?"
"No."
Callie raised her eyebrows. "Well, glad we got all that cleared up."
"Not here,"
Jilly clarified.
"In Yartha City."
She pointed to a spot on the horizon that was absolutely indistinguishable from the rest of the landscape.
"Must hurry, though. Shops will close soon."
"Okay." Bernie saw no transport among their rescue party. How do we get there?" Quick as a thought, two Kyoshins leapt onto a third's shoulders. The topmost scanned the horizon with a crude pair of binoculars. After a moment, the triad disbanded and reported their findings.
"Nurmash caravan," Jilly translated. "Three of us should go for safety."
"Aye, men," Callie volunteered.
"And me." Bernice shouldered her pack. "Just one thing. What's a Nurmash?" She wished she hadn't asked. As she and Callie fetched their gear from the shuttle pod, a handful of Julie's friends and relations fanned out and beat a rhythmic pattern on the ground. At first, Bernice thought she was seeing a heat mirage. Then she realized the undulating waves came from 5 worm-like creatures, each about the size of a flattened underground car. They looked like the product of some unholy union between a caterpillar, a centipede, and a naked mole rat. Each of their body segments had 3 sets of legs, with each segment connected by armor-plated junctures. Callie gave Bernice a wry look.
"Behold our noble steeds."
The armored junctures reminded Bernice of a cockroach's backside. Predictably enough, that was right where the riders sat. If the Kyoshin children were anything to go by, they clambered up the big creatures, stroking and patting them while their elders tossed out clumps of dried vegetable matter for the Nurmash to eat. Meanwhile, the rest of the party held a collection. Jilly received strips of a dried bark-like substance. Money? And all 3 travellers got a small flask of water.
After some terse yellow flashes from Jilly's flanks, Callie and Bernice both got two more flasks each. Bernice was touched. Kyoshans worshipped water. It couldn't have been easy for them to part with so much, just to make sure two big maladapted mammals didn't dry up in their desert.
Whoops, looks like our train's pulling out of the station.
Callie was right. Having exhausted the dried veggies, the Nurmash were starting to move back the way they'd come.
Oh!
Bernice swore, glad that the Kyoshan youngsters, tumbling gracefully from the caravan, couldn't understand what she'd just said.
Jilly, can you hold them up? How do we get on?
Jilly leapt onto the nearest one, clinging to its side like a bluebottle fly, then hauled herself up on its middlemost juncture. Bernice grunted,
Oh, great. Any tips for those of us without dynamic adhesion on our digits?
Jilly shrugged.
Be sure to choose a big one.
Right, because next to all these agile little lizard people, Bernice didn't feel big and clumsy enough already. She studied the departing worms. The Nurmash had a caterpillar-like gait, smoothly hugging the ground until a wave suddenly arched their back from their hind feet to their front. It was all a question of timing. Get on before a wave hit, and you were golden. Bernice clenched her fists. Not for nothing had Bernice Summerfield won a silver medal for gymnastics at primary school. She planted her feet, counted down, and made a run for it. It almost worked. Halfway there, a wave hit early. Bernice executed a beautiful backward somersault that she hadn't quite meant to do and landed directly on an armoured juncture. There, easy peasy. She might even have gotten away with it, if not for Callie's riotous laughter.
Oh, encore! Callie called, clinging for dear life to a set of Nurmash hindquarters. The judges give it a 10.
You can talk, McAllister. Bernice chuckled. I see you've opted for the piggyback sloth approach.
Hey, slow and steady wins the race, Callie countered, inching forwards on the Nurmash's back by about half a millimetre.
Bernice looked behind them. The pilot stood awkwardly in a crowd of Jilly's friends and relations, each Kyoshan's tail wrapped around another's waist and ankle. She tipped them a wave. Did Kyoshan's wave? Probably not, and settled in to enjoy her very first ride on a Nurmash caravan. The novelty wore off quickly. Bernice was dismayed to learn that the Nurmash smelled no better than they looked. Their bodies had nothing like a horse's mane to hold onto, only stiff, bristling hairs that jutted out between the armoured plates to chafe your legs. Bernice predicted massive saddle sores by journey's end. Then there was their constant lurching motion. Bernice Summerfield had a fairly strong stomach, but the big worm's galumphing gait was making her innards reconsider their stance on this afternoon's lunch.
Right, Callie, she checked. Fine, good, haven't barfed yet.
That pretty much summed things up for Bernice too.
Don't look down,
Chilly advised them.
Watch the horizon. Stare at a landmark.
Which would have been wonderful advice if there had been any landmarks to stare at. So, Jilly, Bernice began, hoping that some light conversation would take her mind off being sick. Do you always travel by Nurmash?
No,
Jilly confirmed.
Mostly we walk. Only take Nurmash for heavy loads.
Heavy loads like two flabby seasick humans, Bernice thought. All at once her mount shifted to the right, trying to inch over towards Callie's.
Oi! Hey, stop! Oh. Jilly, how do you steer this thing?
Pull its hair,
Jilly hissed. Bernice did. The big worm's skin flinched, and the legs on its right side jerked in annoyance. Slowly it scuttled back into line.
What on earth was that about?
Bernice demanded, releasing her grip.
Not sure,
Jilly offered, though something in her voice made Bernice wonder. They rode on in silence. The day was losing some of its heat. If this was Kyoshin midwinter, Bernice hated to think what the summers were like, and that was at least some relief. But they'd been going for quite a while now, with still no sign of a city. So, Jilly, what do you usually do to pass the time on long trips? In answer, Jilly reached into her pack and pulled out a ukulele. You are kidding me! Bernice remembered Jilly's old ukulele from the dig site, but this one was different. It was painted a lurid lime green, with something like orange algae stuck to its top in swirling patterns. Callie seemed to remember Jilly's ukulele skills too.
Oh, Jilly, are you sure you want to do that? The suns are setting. Won't the temperature drop?
That's right, Bernice added. You don't want to knock it out of tune, do you? Bernice wasn't sure Jilly bought the excuse. But she put the instrument back in her pack without inflicting any music on them. Another silence fell. Bernice suddenly thought of the travel journals she'd kept on long trips when she was little. If she'd made one for this particular jaunt, it might have read something like this. My Kiosk Travel Diary by Bernice Summerfield, aged none of your bleeping business. First leg. Learned how to ride. Nurmash are hairy and uncomfortable. Saw some rocks and narrowly avoided a ukulele. Haven't been sick yet. Second leg. Had to yank my Nurmash back in line as it went after Callie's again. Not hot at all now, and I saw three very bright stars come out. Also, more rocks. Didn't throw up yet. Third leg. Travel games. Started with I Spy. I picked S, and Callie said sand. It was a short game. Saw some rocks that looked like a cat with a fish in its mouth. Still haven't been sick. Fourth leg. Saw a pile of rocks I'd swear we already passed. Callie suggested a sing-song. I pretended to be sick. Bernice was just wondering how they would stop if one of them needed a loo break, when her Nurmash drifted over towards Callie's again.
Oh, what is wrong with this oversized worm?
Jilly pointed a reluctant finger at Callie's Nurmash.
I think that one is in season.
Bernice and Callie both looked up.
What?
Unfortunately, in her surprise, Bernice loosened her grip on the big worm's hair. By the time she corrected her mistake, it was too late. The Nurmash mounted its target, flinging Bernice off its back and sending Callie leaping for dear life. Jilly leapt from her own mount.
Bernice!
She cried.
Callista, you are safe?
I'm good, Callie called. Got sand in my shorts, but yeah, everything works.
Bernice got up. Fine here. She had more experience than she wanted of dropping from moving objects. But still, she was glad the ground here was soft sand dunes rather than desert hardpan. She and Callie stared at the Nurmash coupling vigorously in the dunes.
Should we give them some privacy?
Callie wondered. Well, that's a new one for the insurance forms, Bernice noted. Failed to reach destination due to our vehicles mating.
Gah!
Something cool and rough slithered around Bernice's ankle. Jilly's tail. Callie yelped too.
Jilly, I wish you'd warn us first.
It was hard to be really annoyed, though. Bernice supposed the little tail hug was just Jilly's way of telling them she was glad they weren't hurt. The three of them watched their caravan depart. The other worms were already too far ahead for anyone but Jilly to catch them up. So until the two writhing Nurmash finished, they were stranded. Jilly gave Callie an appraising sort of look.
You are tallest.
Callie frowned.
Yes, but what's that got to do with... Oh, okay, this is happening.
Callie stood very still as Jilly climbed her like a flagpole and peered through a pair of binoculars.
It's a town, she reported. Very small, not far.
Bernice was sceptical. Do very small towns here sell engine coolant? Jilly stowed her binoculars.
Perhaps, but past the town there is a road. Someone might give us a ride.
Bernice privately wondered why they hadn't just hitchhiked in the first place if that was an option, but declined to inquire. Jilly climbed down and the three of them set off, leaving the Nurmash to their exertions. It was slow going. Bernice ached all over. She was privately glad for the chance to get her land legs back, and the cooling air settled her stomach. But she was fairly certain her thighs would never be on speaking terms again. Slowly the dunes gave way to flat, rocky terrain. As the twin suns set, coloured lights began to appear across the landscape. Bernice realised that what she'd taken for distant rock formations were actually camouflaged dwellings. The soft, colourful twinkling put her in mind of Earth's midwinter fairy lights. She sighed. Bernice Summerfield had been to many festivals on many worlds, but there was something about a midwinter holiday, a time meant for snuggling up by a warm hearth with family and friends, that made the travelling stranger feel extra lonely. So, Jilly, what are the three sisters all about? You never told us in your letter. Jilly pointed at the three bright stars Bernice had seen earlier. Was it her imagination, or were they closer together now? And named them off one by one.
Grandmother, mother, daughter. Once a year they align to remind us that though we are separate, we are still one, like drops in a river.
We are water, Bernice said, recalling the favourite Kyoshan prayer. Oh, and speaking of which, I brought a little water of my own, for the celebrations. She reached an outpack and was relieved to find that her precious cargo had survived. A 1,000-year-old Nebulian brandy sloshed reassuringly in its bottle. Good old shatterproof plastic glass. Jilly regarded the brandy.
You are guests. No need for gifts.
We were not supposed to bring something.
Callie looked confused. It's a Terran thing, Bernice explained. When we visit your house for the first time, we'd like to bring a little something to say thank you. Jilly tilted her head.
Ah, I see. Then that is fine.
It was fully dark by the time they reached town. The temperature had dropped so much, Bernice was grateful for the field jackets Jilly had told them to pack. Unfortunately, the sight that met them wasn't much warmer than the air. All of the shops and most of the buildings looked empty. The only visible light was a marshy green glow from what seemed to be a tavern. The three of them eyed it cautiously.
Okay. Stop me if you've heard this one, Callie said. A brunette, a blonde, and a lizard walk into a bar.
Bernice snorted. Not likely. Looks like they forgot to add a door. Jilly ignored them.
I will go.
She scampered through a low rectangular opening that Bernice had mistaken for a cooling vent, which actually was the door, because funnily enough, the doors on Kios were built for Kyoshans and not clueless terracentric humans. Thankfully, Bernice only had a few seconds to stew in her embarrassment before Jilly re-emerged.
They are closed.
Great,
Callie muttered.
But there is a fuel station.
Where?
Close.
20 minutes of searching, swearing, and window peeping later, they found the station. It was closed too.
There's a light over there,
Callie noted, pointing to a small outbuilding. Bernice sighed. Oh, why not? If the occupants didn't have any coolant, she hoped that they would at least have some food or water for a group of weary travellers. A squadron of armed guards, however, was not on her wish list. 8 Kyoshan sentries sprang from hiding, bristling with spears. The travellers turned to flee and found 6 more guards blocking their escape.
Jilly?
They were brusquely searched for weapons, amid much clicking and croaking and flashing of flanks. It was beyond alarming to be in the dark, so to speak, unable to understand a single wavelength of what they were saying. But then one guard produced a small metal box. It had a light sensor on the front and a multi-species set of earbuds sprouting from the top. A vox box. Bernice and Callie looked at each other. A second box didn't seem to be in the offing, so they put their heads together and took one earbud apiece. As they did, a Kyoshan in a grand peacock-coloured headdress strode upright from the outbuilding, flanked by 2 attendants. Jilly actually gasped. Her crest shot up and knocked her slouch hat off, her sides lighting up in what Bernice would have sworn was a blush. The Kyoshan, a high-ranking official, a religious leader, eyed them with a regal gaze.
I am Mother of the Waters, Prime Matriarch of all Chaos.
There was an awkward lag between her words being spoken, flashed, croaked, and the translation coming in through their earbuds.
2 of you are foreigners. Your friend tells my guards you have travelled far.
Bernice found her voice first.
We have, ma'am, by spaceship,
by shuttle pod.
By caravan, on foot,
Callie added. Mother of the Waters considered this.
And what assurance do I have that you are not spies?
Bernice and Callie looked at each other again. Oddly enough, in all her travels, Bernice had never once encountered an agency that issued official not-a-spy badges. One of the Prime Matriarch's attendants leaned forward. They have no weapons, your fluidity. They could be the ones that the stars foretold, the strangers bearing gifts.
Gifts!
Bernice's spirits gave a hopeful lurch.
Yes, we have gifts! Brought from afar.
Then, at a guess, she added,
the 3 brightest stars in the heavens led us here.
This was apparently the right thing to say.
Come this way.
They followed Mother of the Waters into the outbuilding, crawling in on their bellies. Kyoshan doors were hard on human bodies and dignity alike, trailed by the retinue of guards. The building seemed to be some kind of stable. The first room held Kyoshan livestock, scrawny-looking grouse, rodents and insects bigger than Bernice's fist grazed contentedly at troughs and feeders. The second room was hidden by a woven fibre fabric.
You must purify yourself before you enter.
This seemed to involve a lot of incense wafting and dousing their eyes with something that Bernice dearly hoped was clean, sterile water. Purification complete, they were ushered through to the outbuilding's inner sanctum. It was very small. There was no feed or livestock, just 4 sentries guarding one small trough, holding some dried straw, a few shards of eggshells, and 3 very tiny baby Kyoshans.
Behold my children, Mother of the Waters said, the future queens of Chaos.
The future was adorable. One of the newly hatched queens gazed up at them and chewed on her tiny baby fist. Bernice fought a strong urge to coo. She and Callie knelt down, which seemed like the thing to do, and rummaged in their packs for their gifts. Bernice went first.
To the future queens, I give a flask of the finest fire water.
She started to put the Nebulian rum into the queen's crib, but then thought better of it.
Just, don't let them drink it until they're grown up.
She watched in silent mourning, as one of the advisers took the flask. The finest rum she was likely to find in a decade, and she hadn't even tasted one drop. Jilly looked equally unhappy about parting with her gift. She cradled the lurid lime and orange ukulele as if she were abandoning her own firstborn offspring.
"To the future queens, the gift of song," she said, "that rivers of music may flow through their lives."
She placed the uke gently in the trough, where one of the infant queens promptly wrapped her tail around it. Then came Callie's gift. It looked like a very ordinary jam jar with pebbles at the bottom. Bernice was worried for a moment. Would such a cheap offering cause offence? But at the sight of it, an excited frisson went through the room. The advisor's flanks twinkled a light mauve colour, which the Vox Box translated as, "Ooh." Callie placed the jam jar in the cradle.
"To the future queens, I give the gift of water from my home world. Pure mountain snow melt. To remember that we are one, even though we are separate, like drops in a river."
Bernice hardly needed the Vox Box to translate the soft answering flicker from every Kyoshan flank. "We are water." A hush fell. No one dared break it until the Prime Matriarch stepped forward. "My honoured guests, you must be tired after your journey. Our hospitality is limited, but whatever comforts we have are yours." The trio traded a look. "Actually, your fluidity," Bernice bit her lip, "you wouldn't happen to have any engine coolant, would you?" My Kiosk Travel Journal by Bernice Summerfield. Aged, look, I've told you once before. Addendum. Dashing through the dunes in a six-seat hovercraft, soldiers in the fore and Terrans to the aft. Ha, 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 hearts are full of cheer. Our clothes are full of sand. Thank gods this hovercraft is not a Nurmash caravan. The inbound journey was much more pleasant than the outbound. They rode in the Prime Matriarch's own personal hovercraft, driven by two of her guards. Jilly sat in the back between Bernice and Callie, explaining that the laying and hatching of a queen's eggs almost always happened in secret locations to avoid political intrigue at the Palace Warren.
"Well, I'm just glad the Terrans in the room were such idiots," Callie pronounced. "Those gifts we weren't supposed to bring probably saved our bacon."
Jilly looked pensive.
"They were good gifts," she said softly. "They would have pleased my family. It was very thoughtful."
Bernie smiled. "You're very welcome, Jilly."
"Speaking of family, though," Callie said, "if there's only one Prime Matriarch, what'll happen to the babies when they grow up? Will they rule as a triad?"
"Possibly,"
Jilly allowed.
"Or the biggest one may eat the others. Hard to say."
Kyoshans had such good poker faces, Bernice honestly couldn't tell if she was joking. When they reached the crash site, Bernice wondered if they were being treated to more Kyoshan humour. The shuttle appeared to be working. All lights functional, all systems go, but the site itself was completely abandoned.
"Did everyone get eaten by the Queen?" Callie wondered.
Jilly pointed to the colourful lights of her distant family warren.
"Looks like we all went home."
Everyone clambered back into the hovercraft and followed suit. Several of Jilly's friends and relations sat around an open fire, noshing roasted beetles from a platter. The pilot, and his freshly bandaged nose, staggered around making Godzilla noises to the Kyoshan children, trilling with glee and clinging to each of his limbs. "The shuttle's working," Bernice noted, stepping out of the hovercraft with their donated coolant.
Ah, yes.
The pilot froze, urging his small passengers to disembark.
How is it working?
Callie pressed.
Well,
The pilot winced, but appeared to decide it was best gotten over with quickly.
I actually found some coolant tucked underneath the spare thruster cables. Fancy keeping it there, hey?
He twiddled his fingers and added hastily,
but the good thing is I was able to call headquarters. They're sending us a replacement pod and a clean-up crew. No charge.
Bernice glared.
The coolant was here? All the time?
The man had at least the good grace to look mortified.
Oops.
Just then, a hissing flare lit up the sky, narrowly preventing a homicide. Everyone flocked to the source. A few metres from the Warrens, a fountain flowed into a shallow reflecting pool. The hissing came from a fire blazing atop the fountain's central pillar, its flames burning from violet to scarlet to blue and then back again. The Kyoshans gathered around it. Everyone wrapped their tails around each other and gazed at the night sky. The three sisters were converging. Jilly turned to her Terran guests.
Join us!
Oh, Jilly, Bernice traded glances with Callie.
Thank you, but I don't know that we really belong in one of your ceremonies.
Yes, you do,
Jilly insisted.
We are water. We are all water.
Bernice wasn't sure how this was going to work. She didn't even have a tail for a start. The Kyoshan who made room for her in the circle seemed to be thinking much the same thing. She gave Bernice's rear end a considering sort of glance, looked up, and then reached out her hand for Bernice to take. Bernice accepted. Around the circle, Callie and even the pilot had found their places, both looking a bit awkward, but oddly touched. Even the Prime Matriarch's guards had left their spears in the hovercraft to join in. And then the three sisters aligned. Different entities. Separate, but one. Their light blazed so brightly it was almost painful. The Kyoshans closed their eyes, muted colours from their flanks shimmering in the reflecting pool. Were they meditating? Praying? It felt like she was eavesdropping, so Bernice closed her eyes too and tried to join in their contemplations. She thought of absent family and friends, parted from her by time, space, or state of being. She thought of everyone who had helped her make her who she was. Helpers, teachers, enemies, lovers, and she remembered the face of one small Kyoshan offering an open hand to a weary stranger far from home in deep midwinter. It wasn't the holiday she'd planned on. She'd crashed a shuttle pod, endured a trial by Nurmash, and nearly been turned into Kyoshan shish kebab. On the upside, though, she'd experienced a new culture, played magi to three future queens, and taken part in a ritual that very few outsiders got to see. Best of all, she was safe and warm among friends, which, heaven knew, was more than most of the universe could say on any given night. It was the best midwinter gift she could think of, being happy for a moment, and knowing it. Bernice Summerfield smiled. She had to admit, there were worse ways to spend a Christmas holiday.